Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests, who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP, or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone and to our viewers from Far East. Today we are from Far East. Good night.
Welcome to Season 3, Week 1 of our show, Swiss Impact with Banerjee. And the show is about impact investing. And special topic for Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact? With this show, we are increasing awareness of the topic by talking with global leaders, policymakers, experts, and academics on the topic of impact investment and, of course, impactful businesses as well.
And before we start, just wanted to let you know that if you like our show, then please find us on YouTube and subscribe to it. It's very easy. Just go on youtube.com/Swiss Impact. And then you can select and watch all our previous shows with leaders from around the world. And you will be also be informed of the upcoming shows.
And I also want to mention our course, because it has been expanding like anything. Not only we are training students from Switzerland, Nordics, India, but also from Africa and East European countries. And of course, we teach them how to get funded in impact investing sector. I'm amazed that so many youths are sharing our vision in making their future based on working and living in a way that it is good for society and the environment. For all upcoming courses, please stay tuned and in touch. Consult our page, new page, svetaandben.com. Anything you want to tell today before we invite our guests? Any stories?
I just wanted to tell that after such a long break, we had a break of 4 weeks or something. Yeah. Too much has happened around the world. There's forest fires in Europe, floods in Asia, earthquake in Americas. So I'll just keep it short. I'll summarize a short discussion I had with a friend of mine who comes from the fossil fuel industry. He said that despite whatever our political and financial leaders are telling us, the deadline of global temperature rise of 1.5 centigrade has passed. The European Green Deal or any such attempts are going to help. At this moment, we need a global problem. And because it's a global problem, we need a global solution. Mm-hmm. And only way, he said, that we can keep our temperature below 1.5 degrees centigrade is if the whole world immediately stops with investing in further fossil fuel projects.
Which, of course, is not going to happen.
Exactly. And invest in renewable energy sources. For example, there are many power stations being built around the world, coal power stations. How can we from the West forbid the poor countries in Africa or Asia to build these as... Like, for example, if they use renewable sources like sun and wind, which is a supply-oriented energy resource, it will not work because they do not have sufficient energy storage system linked to it. And if they build the energy storage system, it will become more expensive, which they cannot afford.
Yes.
So why would these countries with limited money or limited resources go not for the cheapest available solution unless the richer countries support them? So these so-called hyped up Green Deal are doomed to fail unless we all come together as one humanity and act, which unfortunately at this moment is too much to ask from our politicians.
Thanks, Ben, for this inspiring and depressing news as usual. So let's make it our job at the Swiss Impact and with our global partners with this program. We want to achieve the goal together for the humanity. Let's start season three and traveling actually very, very far to Hong Kong. And let's not let our amazing guest wait any longer and invite him in studio. So welcome, Mr. Lawrence Lee.
Hello. Hello, Ben. Hello, Zen. Good afternoon.
Hi, good evening
to myself.
Welcome. So welcome, Lawrence. So for our viewers, Lawrence is the chairman of the Financial Services Development Council, known as FSDC, from Hong Kong. The FSDC is an advisory body to the Hong Kong SAR government on all matters relating to the development of Hong Kong as an international financial center. It engages the industry in formulating proposals to promote the further development of the financial service industry of Hong Kong and to map out the strategic direction for the development.
And I'd like to add also that Mr. Lee's profession is practicing barista. He focuses on banking, commercial, company and securities law. Earlier, Lawrence worked with the Securities and Futures Commission in Hong Kong and before that at a law company in New York. You are a judge of the International Court and Regulatory Tribunal in Doha, Qatar, fellow of the Hong Kong Polytechnic University, and honorary fellow of the Asian Institute of International Financial Law at the University of Hong Kong, and a senior fellow at the Center for Financial Regulation and Economic Development at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Wow. Impressive.
How do you manage that in 24 hours?
I'm impressed by you being able to go through all of that. I hope my staff hadn't required it. It's really a bit of a mouthful. Could I suggest two things? Just remember two things. One, half my time, I'm the chairman of the FSDC. That is a funny animal that the Hong Kong government has created that is publicly funded, but entirely led by private sectors. And our job is mostly to criticize the government nicely and politely about how the regulators and the government authorities can do better to make Hong Kong an even better international financial center. And the other half of my time, I'm a litigator, and the only thing you need to remember is I wear a wig.
The good old times.
Sounds great, Lawrence.
But you're litigating in Hong Kong or in Qatar? Or in China? Or
I am based in Hong Kong. I hear cases from Qatar by over the internet, and I mostly go to court in Hong Kong, where we have the British tradition of common law system, and that's where I wear a wig like most barristers in London.
Exactly. So we just wanted to ask if you can introduce yourself shortly with something which we have forgotten, and maybe a little bit about the activities of FSDC for our international viewers.
Let me focus on FSDC. As I've said, it's a funny animal, and in many ways it actually shows, reflects exactly how the Hong Kong government is committed to making Hong Kong an even better international financial center. As you know, we are the leading center in Asia. We are easily the most international and the most diverse in all our respects, banking, securities, insurance, provident funds, private equity, so on and so forth. And about six, seven years ago, the Hong Kong government had a bright idea that needs to find something that is cross-sectoral. It needs to find a body that cuts across all these sectors. And on top of that is, they need to find a body that is willing to criticize the government. So you basically internalize the ever need to improve. And so what they did was they went to the legislature and they got public funding to fund a privately led platform. The FSDC has a board of 18 directors, only one of which is ex officio, is the Minister for Financial Services and the Treasury. And the chairman, myself, plus 16 other board members are all drawn from the private sector. And our job is to advise the government on where they haven't been doing as well, and also, as importantly, where we can look forward to doing strategic moves and things that are ahead of others. Mm-hmm.
That sounds very interesting. Another question to you, Lawrence. You know that Hong Kong is one of the world's major financial centers, and in our opinion, it's one of the most important bridges between East and West. And how do you personally see the awareness of sustainable and impact investment in your sector in Hong Kong?
I'm really glad for the answer. I was thinking about sustainable development. I was trying to reflect on my personal experience. And I must confess, up till a few years ago, I was not a convert. I was very suspicious of this whole topic. I thought it was all very
fashionable. That's normal. Many are at the beginning.
So on and so forth. But you know what converted me? What converted me was exactly the combination of finance and the real economy. It was exactly also the combination of East and West. Sitting in Hong Kong, I can actually see all the ESG needs in mainland China. Mm-hmm. I can see all the ESG potential in mainland China. I can see the ESG impact that will make on real people.
And maybe and for our viewers, Lauren, sorry for interrupting, ESG, environmental, social, and governance criteria, for those who never heard about that before.
Oh, I suppose by now I'm a bit too much of a convert and use that short form without expanding on it. And what I really saw was how, not just how the whole area took off, how impact finance took off. I saw mm-hmm. it making a real difference to real lives and to the environment and to people. And that ranges from a very well-developed city like Hong Kong, where there was still a lot of room for improvement, where our cars got cleaner, where our airport authority got in the act of carbon emission lowering, and how they try to go about it, not just through the airplanes, but also through, you might not have heard about it, through the food court in the airport. I see that as well as to the cement plants in China. There are several listed companies from mainland China that produce cement in the mainland. And I saw a plant that through smart investing, through gearing their reporting to ESG, they were able to highlight themselves, how they stood above the others by saying, look, yes, I'm in the cement industry, a bit of an old industry, but we do it very smartly and look at all the how we pull ahead of others. And then I became a convert through actually seeing not just impact investing and impact finance took off, but seeing the fruits that it was mm-hmm. able to bear on a real economy. And may I note that on a very fast growing economy.
Okay. And that, just jumping over again back to you, that you have worked as a lawyer in US, you are chairing now FSDC in Hong Kong, you have been active in mainland China, even in Qatar. So you have a deep understanding of all, at least I assume, of these international markets. How do you experience the difference and the similarities between the activities of your sector, especially if I compare between New York and Hong Kong, because these are the two places where you have worked?
Indeed. Well, first, I must correct yourself. I wouldn't say deep. I've had interesting exposure, and I've actually been really grateful to have worked in many different places. Perhaps my formative years in the New York market, and then for a longer stretch of time in the Hong Kong market. But I also dabble in the Middle East and other places. There are both similarities and differences, and they're fun. The similarities between New York and Hong Kong, the biggest similarity is the buzz. I'm constantly reminded whenever I get to walk down the street in New York. I haven't done so for a couple of years for obvious reasons, but before the pandemic, I like to go back to visit often. I walk down the streets of New York and I walk down or walk around Hong Kong and I walk around Tokyo and I walk around other places. You can feel the buzz in New York and Hong Kong and London. It tells you, you walk around, it tells you this is an international place, this is a happening place. Another similarity between New York and Hong Kong is innovation. You see financial innovation in New York and Hong Kong in slightly different forms. In New York, the financial innovation is probably more law-driven, is probably more splicing and dicing products. So you see a lot more derivatives. You see a lot of deals. You run out of terms calling mezzanine deals because it's more than mezzanine deals now. They're able to put in so many layers in deals in New York. But you see that in Hong Kong too, less so driven by clever structuring and more so driven by needs and driven by how things are cross-border. So those are some of the similarities. There are also the differences. And when I think about the differences between probably a market like New York that has been a leading financial center compared with Hong Kong that is, I'll call it a relative newcomer, although frankly, we've been there for probably by now 20 odd years. And this reminds me of something which a partner in my New York firm once said when I was still younger. He said, Lawrence, one thing to remember is not where you are that makes you interesting. It's the rate of climb that makes you interesting. And that's true for financial centers too. For a very mature market like New York, and I would venture to say London and some other centers, they're more established. There are a lot of buyers, there are a lot of interesting things that are happening. But as a center, it's not so much defined by one story or by growth story. So internationally, it's just as attractive, but it's a bit less interesting. The mystique is not there, the excitement isn't as high. And Hong Kong still has that. Hong Kong is right next to easily the highest growth economy in the world. And not just the highest growth in terms of rates, but also in absolute terms, it is a gigantic economy. It's also a really exciting economy. And that in turn makes us exciting in ways that New York and London, probably they were maybe a century ago, but perhaps I would say in this century, it's our century now.
Well, I didn't expect any other answer, you know. Lawrence, from your biography, you know, you have very eclectic background. What made you change actually from law to financial services? What is your story? We love stories. How did that happen?
Well, the story is a rather accidental one, really. The story, you say you want the personal one. I'll give you the personal one first before I put in another sales pitch. the story was really as simple as the then chairman, a new chairman of the Securities and Futures Commission, looking for a cheap way to get some U.S. legal expertise. they were redoing the Securities and Futures Ordinance in Hong Kong, our major financial law, and they were budgeting, and they needed U.S. legal advice. Now, if you are doing financial law anywhere in the world, you would be silly not to get some U.S. law advice and some U.K. law advice as to how they do it, right? So they were budgeting for doing some U.S. law advice, and they thought, oh my God, U.S. law firms are so expensive. To say, you know what, instead of paying U.S. law firms, how about we reach out and find some young U.S. law associates in a U.S. law firm who is from Hong Kong and ask him if he's willing to work in-house at a fraction of the price. And so he asked around and he found me, and I was silly enough to think, oh, I'm missing all the action in Hong Kong. So yes, I'm willing to come back to Hong Kong and charge a fraction of the price. That is how I got into finance and got into Hong Kong finance in particular. But I have not regretted ever since. The mix of law and finance and seeing how law really matters, both in a a structuring deal way, in a regulatory way, and now in a litigious way. I am a litigator by profession. But putting all that in a fast-growing and fast-changing market has been very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing this story. Let's go deeper into FSDC. So can you tell us more about its background and history? What are the sectors it fulfills and how does it function? Because here in Europe, many people have no idea how this is happening.
Oh, well, we really function in the typical way that successful organizations in this part of the world has found ourselves, which is one, never forget the private sector leads. But at the same time, never forget the government authority is often the single largest, not the largest, but the single largest player, and therefore can be a very important catalyst for change. So then the trick is, how do you marry the two? How do you marry the overall size and bigger influence of the private sector with a single player that is often the government authority that can provide a catalyst for change? We do that by, as I said, having a board, or one, the government putting the money where the mouth is, so the funding comes from the government, but the leadership comes from the private sector. On top of that is we leverage in-house research with our private sector partners. So we have an in-house research team, but the research agenda is set by our private sector agenda, private sector partners. And whenever I have to talk a private sector friend or partner into helping, I tell him, come on board, you are, however, only half the reason why I want you. So let's say I'm going after this guy called, let's say, David. The conversation will be, David, we really want you to come. You are an industry captain. But incidentally, I want more than you. I want your research people. I want your industry insights. And I want your private sector network. And so whenever we bring someone on board, we are open about wanting to leverage. We are open about wanting to take the opportunity to provide a government catalyst with the need for the private sector to come in with their expertise, their insights. And oftentimes, whenever we are ready to do promotion, such as impact finance, I'll come back to that as an example. Whenever we do that, we also tell our private sector friends and partners that we care about their network and their influence and their leadership. Give you an example, impact finance. It's easy to say the government will fund the study, the government will fund the industry, the standard setting, the government will fund, in fact, we also fund some certification. So there's subsidy for example, a green financing certification. But more importantly, we have come to realize is we actually want the private sector network. So when we approach, for example, a leading private bank from your part of the world, you can guess which one. Actually, let me see. Maybe they're in the background.
Yeah. This one is this side is UBS.
No, wrong. This is Credit Suisse.
Oh, Credit Suisse.
That one is UBS. That one behind.
Okay. Yeah, let me tell you. Both are partners. One we have more success in that. One of them is on our board, and the other we are eyeing for some other deeper kind of partnership. And this is the conversation I have with both of them. Okay.
Perfect.
We want more than just the person. We want more than just the name. We want their clients. We want them to help us reach out to their clients to share investing experience, to share what they care about when it comes to impact finance and what Hong Kong can do for them in diversifying their impact finance. So the proposition we make is we know that they are leaders globally already in impact finance, but we suspect that they have more experience in Europe. the kind of impact finance opportunities and ESG opportunities in Hong Kong and this part of the world in the Greater Bay Area are going to be slightly different. There probably are opportunities for them to get their hands dirty, so to speak. They can actually reach deeper into the impact. And that would mean more partnership. And we want to be part of that story.
That makes absolutely sense, you know, because usually impact investment, when you need to approach people locally because they know best what is the best deal, best project, and it makes absolutely sense. Yeah.
And before I go to the next question, I just wanted to add that it's really good that you're doing it, because my personal opinion is that the banks here still are too much in their financial project. They do not still have the link with the business or link with the private sector. So they make beautiful plans. I'm sure you must have read the plans of European Investment Bank and all that. But very little comes on the ground level because they don't have the connection which you have with the private sector, with the business, with the project. It's really good. I think Europe can learn a lot from you.
Well, in many ways, Hong Kong was forced into that position historically, is that we have always been a city that serves a much larger economy. So we are acutely aware that our government initiatives can only go so far.
Yeah, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted, because I was, before we were planning this program, I was watching one of your earlier interview, where you said you compared the financial services on macro level as a blood circulation of the body, that it circulates and it brings all the stakeholders and all the organs and everything working together. And I completely agree with it, because that's also one of the topics we teach. But if I proceed forward with using your analogy, as you can see from the recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC report, the body is sick, our economy is sick, the environment, the earth. So financial center, at least we believe that the financial center has the power and the resources to help cure the body. So my first question would be, do you agree to that? And second question will be that, you know, our show is about sustainability and impact investment in finance and businesses. What are the activities of FSDC on this topic?
Okay, let me first say, sick is one way to put it. I slightly prefer to say that we have beaten up this body a bit too much.
Yeah.
And so it's time to find ways to let it rest. But then again, one must go on. So the body can't completely rest. The question is then how to rejuvenate it.
Yeah.
And finance can do a lot. It really can. I still remember when I was studying in the US, a certain vice president has just come off his term and has made the environment his big topic post-vice presidency. He was very, very successful at raising awareness. He mobilized half of Hollywood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's an old friend of mine, by the way.
I'm sure you're not commenting on his age.
No. Unfortunately, most of his friends are of that age.
In many ways, the leader in this whole area. And he was able to lead a massive publicity campaign.
Yeah,
but perhaps because it was early stages, one actually see a lot of talk, but not necessarily a lot of resources being put into it yet.
Yeah,
and then I remember a Nobel Prize was put behind this whole topic, again rejuvenating the whole talk. But again, we don't really see necessarily a lot of resources into it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
One would say. The psyche, the global psyche, people's minds were prepared for action. Yeah. And then perhaps, as is always, the financiers come in at the last minute and screw up the credit. But one nice thing about it is the financiers were able to mobilize resources behind it. And that I often think is how impact finance has and is going to make a difference. It's really, in the grand scheme of things, in the history of curing this body, a bit late. But oftentimes, it's the last guy or the sort of the last push that's going to hopefully push us over the inertia. And in many ways, I think impact finance is exactly that.
So you're an optimist.
Well, I have to. I have kids.
Same with us. Exactly.
Yes, yeah. We need to be optimistic, even though sometimes the movement or the actions are really missing here as well. You know, we know there's so much capital available, so many amazing projects, but still the match is not happening in the best way, you know. But we are still working on that with our activities, also helping this to happen. Okay, I have another question for you, Lawrence. So about Hong Kong, which is a unique place, being the only international financial center in China in par with New York and London. So your influence in the whole region is enormous. So are you using this unique position of yours to promote impact and sustainable policies in your financial sector that more people, more institutions get engaged?
Certainly, it is one of FSDC's four priority topics. And let me tell you how we got into it. I earlier said I'm myself a bit of a late convert, but FSDC is not. FSDC, under the previous chairmanship of Mrs. Laura Cha, got into it. Back in 2016, we first studied the topic of green and published a paper. And one of our main recommendations back in 2016 was certification. And then the Hong Kong government and the other authorities took our recommendation, and Hong Kong became a leader in the certification of green finance. So bonds and other securities since then have enjoyed official recognition. That also put Hong Kong at the forefront of impact finance in this part of the world, so in Hong Kong and in China. FSDC came back to the topic in 2018, and we took the topic one step further. We took it from green to ESG and from certification to strategy. And we make a number of recommendations, this time more multi-pronged, and we recommended, for example, that the Monetary Authority, which is the central bank in Hong Kong, incorporate ESG in their own portfolio management. They manage the exchange fund for Hong Kong government and the Hong Kong people. So they are a very large investor.
And when did they do that?
By now, one of the leaders in Asia, both in the public and the private sector, in ESG investing.
Okay.
We recommended back in 2018 that the securities regulator, the SFC, pursue two things. That as regulator of asset managers, that they reconsider and update their principles of responsible stewardship. So they as regulator then talked to and led and guided the regulatory asset managers in updating their views on how to be responsible stewards. They also, as regulators of listed companies, has a role to play in encouraging listed companies to publish their compliance on ESG. And that took us to another recommendation we made to the stock exchange, where they are the frontline regulator of listed companies, to work with listed companies, particularly in Hong Kong. We get a lot of listed companies from mainland China. So the stock exchange worked with them to increase the transparency on how they progressively improve their ESG compliance, which is a major undertaking in Hong Kong because in many ways, these are players which range from state-owned enterprises in the mainland all the way to smaller size, one might even say small size, privately owned enterprises. So you basically have, to use my cement example earlier, probably one of the largest cement supplier in the world, all the way down to a company probably that just owns one factory.
Yep.
So the stock exchange work with that whole range of industries to increase the industry compliance. So that was 2018. And then 2 years again, in 2020, we again look at this topic, and this time the emphasis became on people. Mm-hmm. And we are in the middle of a massive push on ESG talent. Basically, if you have people who are ESG capable and ESG sensitive, you stand a better chance at implementing all your recommendations on the ground.
Yeah. Lawrence, are you also investing in private equity, so non-listed companies? Like, do you engage with this asset class as well? Because here in Europe, usually impact investing is more private equity. Of course, it can be done through various asset classes, but it was originally from private equity. It's emerged from there. So it's still, the impact is higher in private equity than in listed companies. Do you also engage in those?
Indeed, indeed. Thanks for bringing that up. I earlier mentioned the FSDC had four priority areas. ESG is one of the four. Asset management, with an emphasis on the family office and private equity, is another. And you're quite right. It's actually in those two priority areas that we see an intersect. And private equity, actually in Hong Kong, particularly family office, we see that they often lead and are quite visionary in using impact investing, using ESG, and caring about those topics in their family office investing. And they do it for two reasons. One is actually smart money. They are able to invest in oftentimes technologies or manufacturing techniques that will become profitable in a few years' time or become popular. So it's just smart money. And two is because as family offices, that they're able to actually take that and say, you know what, even if at the end of the day, it doesn't turn out to be the high flyer investment that we think they are, they are committed to it as a matter of family principle and as a matter of a family responsibility. Could I add one last thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, yes.
Is that oftentimes we have experienced when we work with family offices, the families would often have a couple of people within the family who care about a particular theme in ESG.
Yeah.
And they then become the champion within the whole family office.
Yeah.
And in many ways, you can think of it as another Gates Foundation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They actually go through the process of thinking about what theme they want to make it into their family theme. And if you are able to then tap into that theme, not only do you have more investment opportunities, you have ready dollars, you actually have champions who are willing to talk to the others to say, to share their deep understanding of this theme. And it's actually one of the best way to popularize or to expand the particular theme that this particular family might have adopted, is to let, if I can actually put it in colloquial terms, let the rich investors talk to the other investors.
Yeah, exactly.
That's perfect, you know, because aligning your values with your money investment is the best way you can do, you know, to also for all financial institutions, what we are teaching, that you need to know what your clients are interested in the heart, right? Then they're much more ready to even invest more or bring more money to the bank if they find this alignment with the clients. And of course, it's even helping to develop your client base as well.
Exactly.
Let me say, I learned this from one of the two institutions behind you.
Exactly. So we educate financial institutions like family offices, asset managers on creating the portfolio, learning more about impact investment. So coming to that, we saw also on your website of FSDC, one of the mission statements that you educate the financial sector. And is sustainable and impact investment part of the curriculum you offer to your members?
Yes, it is. We don't directly run courses, but we hope to do even better. We have struck up partnerships with universities, and we have certainly experienced that universities are reaching out to us saying that their finance students are hearing a lot about impact finance, are hearing a lot about ESG, but the universities, credit to them, they're sensitive to this, but they also feel a bit disadvantaged that they themselves don't really have the people to share, and so they reach out to us and we help them. We also work with people who are already in the industry, but with them, we tend to do more of the on-the-job training. It's not even training. Busy finance professionals, the best way to train them is to offer them opportunities.
Yeah.
So if you offer them opportunities to meet impact investors, they will themselves study and come out and make themselves look good.
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely. You know, I have one concern here in the West, because you were yourself talking about many products, financial products, which are also now are created. So also here, there are a lot of very... But in many cases, to be honest, it is just greenwashing, or it's called also impact washing, right? So are you also aware of this phenomenon in Hong Kong? And what are you advising authorities? Are you advising them at all somehow to control it, so we would remain with true impact also in the financial industry?
I'll be honest. Yes, I'm aware of it. Yes, it's happening here, just like everywhere in the world. You have a topic, you have a label that attracts the eyeball and attracts money, and people will try to jump on the bandwagon. So yes, we do need to deal with that here too. We try to deal with it in three ways. First is to continue to stress the need for transparency and good standards and good certification. Mm-hmm. I last looked at the number, only 1/10 of the green bonds offered in this part of the world is officially certified.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in many ways, one can think of it positively, which is the market has actually shot ahead of the government catalyst. So in that way, it's good. But it also makes one wonder, is there something that isn't really quite there for the other 90%? And so there should be a push to get everything onto some standard. I'm not going to say that there needs to be one standard. I think that's actually not the best way to do things. But as long as there are a number of recognized standards, I don't think there needs to be, strictly speaking, a complete comparison between the standards, but as long as most standards are to a large degree credible, that's good. So that's the first of three things. The second thing is to help the investors become more aware, so that they are not themselves accidentally or in intentionally participating in this greenwashing. And the third thing to do, as I've been saying throughout our conversation, is Hong Kong has a particular advantage. We are actually able to help investors and market see through to on the ground, so to speak, so they can actually see the projects that are being done.
Yep.
And that's probably the best way to have the information feedback into the loop that guards against greenwashing.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. And now I'll get a bit more critical, because among us, I'm the cynical one. So we are nowadays very much using this ESG. In the West, it has been used so much, and especially the ESG ranking, because now more and more Moody's and everybody is coming with ESG ranking. But I'm also reading articles by critics who are saying that this ESG ranking should be taken away, because it is moving the attention away from the real issues which are affecting the environment and economy. And these are diverting the attention. So we should get off the ESG ranking, or we should do something about it. So what is your opinion about this ESG ranking?
Could I be a bit philosophical about it? I go back to my college days in some liberal arts college in the US. Students and teachers debate the various isms. And I remember studying to show my age, feminism. And there were critics that says, oh, you shouldn't do it this way because it takes away from the real issue, and you should actually just tackle the real issues and not give an ism to it.
Yeah.
You know what? They are probably right, but without the ism, the topic would never have gathered as much force, would never have gathered as much momentum. It's just a reality of life that you need a former vice president, you need half of Hollywood, you need a Nobel Prize, you need impact finance, and you need rankings, you need ESG, you need all these things to get enough people behind the topic. In fact, if I said I would be philosophical about it, you need the critics too.
Yeah,
the critics actually also keep the debate alive. Without the critics, yes, without the critics, we'll probably forget the real issues.
Yeah.
But if you actually just follow the critics and forget half of Hollywood, you never popularize the issue.
Yeah, that's very, very true.
That's very important. And, you know, at this moment, what we see that there is a race actually going on between ESG, right? And even the Wall Street transformed the logo from greed is good to green is good, right? So the financial centers like London, Zurich, Frankfurt, they are all participating in this race to be leader for sustainable and impact investment. Looking at your unique position, as we said before, so are you also kind of participating in that? And if yes, what are the strengths and weaknesses compared to other financial centers that I mentioned?
Well, you can look at it as participating in the race. Some people say it's jumping on the bandwagon, and some people say it's a race. But I like what Ben said earlier. It's a global problem, and we need global solution. If I could only add just one S to what Ben said, we need more than one solution. We need global solutions. Yeah. And it's finance is doing its bit. Asia is doing its bit, China is doing its bit, and Hong Kong is doing its bit. And within Hong Kong, the financiers are doing its bit, and the investors are doing their bit. And I venture to say, I as a lawyer, I try to do my bit too. Now, with everyone doing their bit, race is probably a good way to get everyone galvanized. It is nothing like a race that makes people work hard.
Yeah.
Yes, and I like the comparisons. I look at the numbers. Globally, Asia is a bit behind in ESG and impact finance. Within that, Hong Kong is doing quite well. But compared with London and compared with New York, we are still small by a number of measures. But again, I go back to what the partner said to me when I was in a law firm in New York. It's not where you are that makes you interesting. It's the rate of climb.
Yeah.
And we have a lot to climb and we're doing it really fast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I mean, you are definitely much more optimist than I am, I think. I'm always the gloomy one. And we have a common friend, Bernard mm-hmm. Chan, who is from the Executive Council of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region. And he mentioned to me last time we spoke that because we speak quite often, and he said that due to the quick actions and intelligent policies, Hong Kong was relatively less hit by COVID-19 than the Western world. How badly has the financial sector been hit by the COVID-19?
The financial sector has fared remarkably well, both by comparison to financial industries in other financial centers, as well as to the overall economy. You can imagine retail is going to be hit a bit harder. Our financial markets and financial industry has in many ways gone about the last couple of years almost business as usual. They have replaced traveling with a lot more Zooms, and the bankers tell me that at the end of the year They're actually happy with it because one, they have more time for family, and two, they're actually a lot more profitable because there are just as many deals and just as much trading and far less travel expenses and entertainment expenses. I see that the numbers, Hong Kong went from the fifth largest stock market in the world to the fourth this year in terms of market capitalization.
Who did you displace?
When I first came back to Hong Kong, we were the ninth. So we have had a steady climb from the ninth all the way to the fifth last year and to the fourth this year.
Whom did you displace?
Whom
did you displace this year?
I will leave that to your research. I'm told that it's never good to say bad things about others. And not just stock market IPOs and trading, our other sectors of industry have all done really, really well. In many ways, in situations like a pandemic, I look to the subsector that is the hardest hit, because if they are surviving, then I know the sector as a whole is doing quite well. And the subsector that's hardest hit is retail insurance, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And even they are doing okay. There's a dip, but they are finding ways to conduct insurance business without physical contact and make up for that trust gap in other ways.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to say that we have fared really, really well. But I would be remiss not to also say, Ben, if you speak to Bernie often, can I put in a pitch that we should also speak often?
Yeah, exactly. He has been inviting me, but thanks to COVID, it has been such a long time I haven't been able to go there.
And you really should come to Hong Kong, because all it takes is coming to here to feel the optimism and feel the reasons for optimism.
Only if we can spread more awareness about impact investing there, then we are taking the flight. Yeah.
And the food and the drinks, that's the most important for me.
Well, okay, we will leave that unsaid. I don't know whether we want to say that in front of all your audience. But let me stress, impact investing not only has taken off in Hong Kong and in this region, but one must remember, it's also in the context of the fastest growing economy that it is taking off. And that affords a host of opportunities that I dare say would very much complement the experience and insights that a more mature ESG environment like yours.
Yeah.
But then let me ask you this question about the future. What do you hope for the future of impact investing? Do you see it becoming the new normal? And if so, by when?
Oh, the first question is easy. The new normal. Yes, it will. It will. Because you know what? it's not even optimism or pessimism. If one is optimistic, it will continue on this trend. If one is pessimistic, or one has to moderate one's optimism over time, the environment.
Okay, bye.
And human needs, we stay here for the new normal.
The human needs will kick in and galvanize impact finance again. So you know what? If we don't get our act together quickly enough, what we'll have is more than one vice president and more than one Nobel Prize. And that will galvanize the whole debate again. So I am certain that this topic will be here to stay. It will, in shorter time or in longer time, become the new normal. The question is really your last one. How quickly?
Yeah.
And again, sitting, I can't look out to the whole world. My perspective is really just the neighborhood around me. Here, the biggest push is going to be China's push to be carbon neutral. And just that push alone, just that commitment to the world, is going to make impact finance. I know carbon neutrality is just one of the topics in ESG and impact, but it's a big one.
Yeah.
And this is going to provide a lot of impetus. It's going to suck up so much of our attention and so much of our financial energy and financial opportunities that it's going to end up driving the whole talk, the whole push for impact finance.
Sorry, we are now completely running out of time. I just wanted to ask you one last question, and I think you will have to come back because the topic you speak are so interesting. So my last question to you will be, what would be, how would you share any call to action for the global audience?
The thing I tell my family about, and then none of my family members are in finance, the thing I tell them is, you need to care about not just your action, but the action of your money.
Yeah.
And the leverage of your money will multiply much more than your own action. We all work very hard to save, to provide for our future. And so if we care about what we do, we should care more about what our money does.
Wow.
Absolutely, yes.
You're amazing. It's one of the first time we have a speaker who is so strong you're completely aligned with your beliefs and with your actions. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
It was amazing. And by the way, to remind you, you have the right to become a honorary member of our impact community platform Chamomile. Just register, inform us, and we will upgrade you to the other level so you can
do that right away.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for
thank you very much.
Thank you.
And hope to see in Hong Kong live one day.
No, and maybe we should once in a while also talk and give my regards to Bernard then.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, with this, we end up the first show of season 3. And for those who haven't done that yet, subscribe below and keep updated of new shows.
And for all those SMEs, the small and medium enterprise entrepreneurs, who are interested in following the course on ESG or impact investment, please keep an eye on Chamomile and chamomile.ch.
Thanks for watching us. The next week is very inspiring, so don't miss that and act for your future. See you next
Bye
Friday.
For now. Bye for now.
Welcome to season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjee. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.